Okay, Revelation chapter 18, we'll pick up where we left off last Sunday at verse 11. Hopefully we can finish this chapter this morning and get ready to go into one of my favorite chapters in Revelation chapter 19, when we'll be told about Jesus coming back to defeat all evil forces and set up his millennial kingdom, and we come back with him. But what we have covered so far in our look at Revelation chapter 18, the great empire that was built by the Antichrist and the world leaders who helped him will be destroyed during the latter part or near the end of the 7 years of tribulation. And the interesting thing to me is that the Bible tells us that it will be destroyed in a 1 hour period. So it'll be quickly destroyed. And today, as we continue looking at Revelation 18, we're going to see how the powerful people on earth at that time react to the destruction of the city of Babylon and all of the things that go with that city, the capital city, if you will, of the Antichrist. And we're going to see the conditions that will prevail on the earth after the judgment of God falls upon the system of the Babylonian government under the Antichrist. So let's pick up as we left off last Sunday at verse 11. And I'm going to read verses 11 through 13, so follow along in your Bibles. I'm reading again from the New King James Translation, which should be pretty close to what you've got there, even if you don't have the New King James. "And the merchants of the earth will weep and mourn over her, for no one buys their merchandise anymore. Merchandise of gold and silver, precious stones and pearls, fine linen and purple, silk and scarlet, every kind of citron wood, every kind of object of ivory, every kind of object of most precious wood, bronze, iron, and marble, and cinnamon and incense, fragrant oil and frankincense, wine and oil, fine flour and wheat, cattle and sheep, horses and chariots, and bodies and souls of men." All right, let's stop right there. Now, it's obvious to me as I look at Revelation that the merchants of the world will become very rich, or at least some of them will, most of them perhaps, will become very rich doing business with the Antichrist system of government. And when the system of government is in Babylon is destroyed, well, obviously, these rich merchants are going to suffer the consequences as well. Because as it says here in these verses I've just read to you, suddenly these merchants have nobody to buy their merchandise. We have these merchants, and the question is, what have they been selling that has made them all this money? And it tells us, first of all, gold, silver, precious stones, and pearls. We know what those are. Those are expensive metals and stones, which will be very valuable during the days of tribulation, and to some degree are very valuable metals and stones today. Then it talks about fine linen, purple, silk, and scarlet. These are expensive fabrics. Then it talks about citron wood, bronze, iron, and marble. These too can be very expensive items. It talks about cinnamon, spice, incense, perfume, and frankincense. These too can be costly items. It mentions wine, olive oil, fine flour, and wheat. Those can be costly food items or items that you would find in a store. Then it talks about cattle, sheep, horses, and chariots. These could be very valuable things for a person to own. Then, this is the interesting part, it says bodies and souls of men. And these are the last items mentioned on the list of things that will be difficult, if not impossible, for these rich merchants to sell. And obviously, we come up with a question, how could bodies and souls of men be sold? Well, if you go back to the days of the old Roman Empire, you know that they sold people into slavery. And that was also going on in the early days of our country, wasn't it? People being sold as slaves. And I'm only speculating here, but I think it's pretty safe to speculate this. So maybe when it says bodies and souls of men will be difficult for these rich merchants to sell, maybe that's what it means here. That selling people as slaves will be practically impossible for them to do. Even though the merchants might believe at this time that it is acceptable to sell a person into slavery, these merchants will not be too particular in what they trade. And you know, when I think about this situation that will prevail at the end of the 7 years of tribulation, as the Antichrist system of government crumbles and falls, and the results affect the rich merchants, I got to thinking, you know, before all this happens, the rich merchants were buying and selling and getting richer and richer and richer. And many of the big companies today are getting richer and richer. And if you stop and think about it, many of these rich merchants, these merchants who are making big profits, they're also not too particular on what they sell to make money. There are many employers who take advantage of their workers to make big profits. Maybe they're not actually selling them into a slavery, but they're using their labor at wages that are far less than what they really should be paying them. I know that's happened in my life. There were times when I worked in an occupation where I thought that, you know, really the boss ought to be able to pay us more money than what we're being paid, but you know, you didn't have any other choice. You either worked for him or you didn't work for him. But people should remember that these merchants we're talking about here this morning are going to shortly themselves face the judgment day of God. And so I would take that a little further and say that I believe the big merchants, I'm tempted to mention one right now that I think is Stan Kroenke. I'll mention him. Stan Kroenke, the big cheese of Walmart. You know, I don't like him now because he took my Rams out of St. Louis and moved them to Los Angeles. But here's a guy that is making big, big profits, and he doesn't care, or he doesn't seem to care, how it affects other people's lives. He didn't care about all the people in St. Louis who lost their jobs because there was no longer an NFL team in St. Louis. There are many big merchants today who I believe someday are going to face a terrible judgment. Well, let's move on. Verse 14. The fruit that your soul longed for has gone from you, and all the things which are rich and splendid have gone from you, and you shall find them no more at all. Okay? Obviously here, the merchandise that was available for people to buy if they had the money is suddenly not available. It's gone. And the sad part for those people is it will never be available again. The commercial system that will have come into existence during the 7 years of the tribulation under the system of the Antichrist government will be completely shut down. It'll be somewhat only on a much larger scale, like the Depression days back in the history of our country. It'll be a time when it will be next to impossible to even find enough food to feed your family. And even if you have a tremendous amount of money stored away in a bank or underneath your mattress, wherever you might keep your money, there will be great shortages of the real items necessary to live on. So even if you got the money, finding what you want to buy will be next to, if not, impossible. The things the rich people will want, as they've been accustomed to having the finer things in life, those things will be entirely unavailable to them. Buying the fancy cars, buying the fancy clothes for their wives and families, buying the fancy, luxurious homes, suddenly won't be available for them. So what is it that we should desire in life? Well, Jesus said in John chapter 6, verse 27, "Do not labor for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures to everlasting life, which the Son of Man will give you. And friends, I would say to you this morning, unfortunately, there are far too many people today who are ignoring what Jesus said. They are out for the almighty dollar so that they can buy more and more and more and more, and they have no time for God, no time for Jesus. Let's move on to verses 15, 16, and 17. The merchants of these things who became rich by her will stand at a distance for fear of her torment, weeping and wailing, and saying, "Alas, alas, that great city that was clothed in fine linen, purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, for in 1 hour such great riches came to nothing. Every shipmaster, all who travel by sea, by ship, sailors, and as many as trade on the sea, stood at a distance." I want you to notice those last few words. Stood at a distance. Now, as we see here in these verses, these rich and powerful merchants are seen weeping. Obviously, why? All the things that they held as very important to their lives is suddenly gone. Their desire for possessions will no longer fulfill their lives. You know, there are some people, and many people today, that aren't happy unless they're buying more and more and more and more. Their lives are just filled up with material things, and they're never satisfied. And these rich people at this time will suddenly find nothing to satisfy their souls because the things they've been used to buying and sometimes selling won't be available anymore. And the weeping that begins then will last, unfortunately for them, for eternity in hell. These greedy merchants are a classic illustration, my friends, of those in all times who have gained the whole world and end up forfeiting their own souls. Let's move on to verse 17. "For in 1 hour such great riches came to nothing. Every shipmaster, all who travel by ship, sailors, and as many as trade on the sea, stood at a distance and cried out when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, 'What is like this great city?' They threw dust on their heads and cried out, weeping and wailing, and saying, 'Alas, alas, that great city in which all who had ships on the sea became rich by her wealth, for in 1 hour she was made desolate.'" Now, I want you to notice here in particular, because this could easily slip by your notice, notice here the attitude of the shipmasters and the seamen. Notice here they offer no criticism for the extravagance and the behavior of the people in the city of Babylon. They don't stand back and say, "Boy, it's just a shame those people lived like that. It's a shame those people were so messed up and so deceived." There's none of that there. I want you to notice that their only seeming concern is that it will affect their wealth. What's happened in Babylon is going to affect these ship owners, these guys who make their living in shipping on the seas. And you know, when you think about that, there are many people today just like those shipmasters we're reading about here this morning. Because these people, their only concern is about wealth, not for what good they can do with it. They only want to use their wealth to satisfy their own greed. So the merchants and the seamen are, you'll notice here, throwing dust on their heads. Anybody here ever done that? Intentionally. I'm not talking about how you were dusting on something, all of a sudden a bunch of stuff fell. Anybody ever done that? You ever been weeping and throwing dust on your heads? We just don't. Oh, that's right. When Christian was a little boy, he used to go out there in Pat's garden after she had it all tilled up, you know, in a nice fine dirt. He'd go out there and sit down in that thing and just throw the dust up in the air. Oh, yeah, it was a fine mess when we got him inside to take a bath. I'd forgot about that, Pat, but he used to do that. That's right. That's the only situation I can think of in my lifetime where I ever saw someone throwing dust on their heads. We don't do that. But you need to understand, especially if you've done much time reading in the Old Testament, that was a common thing back in the Old Testament days, particularly for the Hebrew people. A person who would throw dust on their head was in a state of mourning. And notice here, they're not only throwing dust on their heads, they are, as it says, weeping and wailing over her. The word her there refers to what's happened to Babylon. And why are they weeping and wailing? Why are they throwing dust on their heads? I submit to you, it's not because they feel sympathy for what's happened in Babylon and what's happened to the people who were in that city, caught up in that system of the Antichrist. No, they're throwing dust on their heads and they're weeping and crying because of how it's going to affect them. Because they have benefited greatly from trading with the Antichrist system. And now that's all gone. The good life for these merchants and these shipmen and sailors is over. Verse 20. Rejoice over her, O heaven, and you holy apostles and prophets, for God has avenged you on her. Well, now we change the situation here. Suddenly, not everybody is sorry to see the bad times on the wealthy people. Here, we find the heavenly beings and the Old Testament prophets and the apostles and all the people of God joining together in a time of rejoicing. They accept God's judgment that has come upon Babylon as righteous and justified. I know that sounds unchristian-like for people to be celebrating over something bad that's happened to somebody else. But the reason why it's not wrong is because what is happening here is God's judgment coming upon them, and it is righteous, and it's justice. It's justified. Those who persecuted and murdered God's people throughout the time, especially during the 7 years of tribulation, are going to receive what they richly deserve. And there's going to be no mercy for them. Friends, please understand this. God's justice will be done. Maybe not as soon as we sometimes hope for it to come, but you can rest assured of this. Any wrong that is done, God sees it. Amen? And any wrong that is done, there will be a day of reckoning. And God's justice will eventually come. Verse 21. Then a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone and threw it into the sea, saying, thus with violence the great city Babylon shall be thrown down and shall not be found anymore. Now this verse here actually is taking us back in time. We have seen here in chapter 18 the destruction of the great city of Babylon. And now we are reading here in verse 21 about an angel forecasting this future destruction. And we might have expected this to come earlier, but you must understand this, that the book of Revelation is not a series of chronological events, because sometimes Jesus reveals things to John where he steps back and gives him further explanation. Sometimes as we go through Revelation, a chapter will take us back to a previous chapter for more detail. And here, the angel tells John how the city is destroyed. And the picture of the great stone crashing into the water symbolizes the speed of destruction that falls upon Babylon. So Babylon the Great is going to be destroyed. And no city like her will ever come forth on the earth again. No great city will ever again gain dominance and an empire status. Her monotheistic religious system, inspired by Satan, will, friends, come to an end. Verses 22 and 23. The sound of harpists, musicians, flutists, and trumpeters shall not be heard in you anymore, No craftsman of any craft shall be found in you any more, and the sound of a millstone shall not be heard in you any more. The light of a lamp shall not shine in you any more, and the voice of bridegroom and bride shall not be heard in you any more. For your merchants were the great men of the earth, for by your sorcery all the nations were deceived. Let's stop right there. So what we're seeing here in these verses 22, 23, and 24, the times that prevail after this destruction comes upon the great city of Babylon, the capital city of the Antichrist, instead of joy of music, there will be the sound of silence, as Simon and Garfunkel said in their famous song years ago. Instead of the luxuries, there will be emptiness. Instead of jobs to earn wages, there will be massive unemployment. Instead of light, there will be darkness. Instead of happy voices like those of a bridegroom and his bride, there will be voices of misery. In contrast with joy here, there is only judgment that falls from God. And why should all this be? It's because Babylon had led astray the powerful people of the earth with the false religious system propagated by the Antichrist during the 7 years of tribulation, which, again, I've said this before, I believe will not be Roman Catholicism, but will be the religion of Islam. Verse 24, and in her was found the blood of prophets and saints and of all who were slain on the earth. Satan's system was also responsible for a murder of millions of people who have died through the ages in violent ways. And friends, justice will come for those who have slain God's people. If we go back to the end of chapter 16, you will find there how it describes an angel pours out the seventh vial or bowl judgment. And it is the last of the 21 plagues that are described in the book of Revelation, which occur right before the second coming of Jesus and the start of the Battle of Armageddon. And it tells us there in chapter 16 that there will be a great earthquake, which will be worse than any other earthquake that has ever struck this earth. And it will tell us that the great city of Jerusalem will be divided into three parts. And it tells us that when this happens, this massive earthquake, every island will disappear and the mountains will crumble. And large hail will fall out of heaven. And not only Babylon falls, but also the cities, the major cities on the earth will also be destroyed as well. And so when this happens, it will completely destroy the political, the commercial system called the Babylon the Great. It will all be wiped off the earth. This will be the end of the world as we see it today. And it will be ready for the renewal process that is coming, and which we're going to be starting to really look at next week. I'm going to close this morning with a true story. I'm going to read this to you. Friends, this is a true story. In 1928, a group of the world's most successful financiers met at the Edgewater Beach Hotel in Chicago. The following were present: the president of the largest utility company, the greatest wheat speculator, the president of the New York Stock Exchange, a member of the president's cabinet, the greatest bear in Wall Street. Now, the bear, I don't mean actually a bear. You know what I'm talking about, okay? The president of the Bank of International Settlements, the head of the world's greatest monopoly. Collectively, these tycoons controlled more wealth than there was in the U.S. Treasury. And for years, newspapers and magazines had been printing their success stories and urging the youth of the nation to follow their examples. 25 years later, this is what had happened to these men. The president of the largest independent steel company, Charles Schwab, lived on borrowed money the last 5 years of his life and died broke. The greatest wheat speculator, Arthur Cutten, died abroad bankrupt. The president of the New York Stock Exchange, Richard Whitney, served a term in Sing Sing prison. The member of the president's cabinet, Albert Fall, was pardoned from prison so he could die at home. The greatest bear in Wall Street, Jesse Livermore, committed suicide. The president of the Bank of International Settlements, Leon Frazier, committed suicide. The head of the world's greatest monopoly, Ivar Druger, committed suicide. All of these men had learned how to make lots and lots of money, but not one of them had learned how to live. That ought to tell us what a lot of money will do for you, and how in the end, it does nothing for you. The lesson is pretty simple with the story of these great, powerful, rich men. Those who center their lives in riches instead of God are making the wrong investment. The rich people of tribulation times will learn that lesson. And many people today are making that very same mistake, because those who lay up treasures in heaven can never lose those.